everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to IASA's Additional Coverage Podcast, episode number 20. I'm your host, Tim Hicks. And joining me for today's additional coverage, I'm pleased to welcome David Perry.
Good morning, and thank you for giving me some time this morning.
David has been actively involved in the insurance business for 40 years and is currently the Area Executive Vice President for Arthur J. Gallagher Risk Management Services, Incorporated. And today, we're going to discuss the severe weather outlook for the Gulf Coast and the issues that come along with that. But first, I would like to recognize the support that we receive from IASA's member companies and volunteers. IASA is the voice of the insurance industry. If your company is not already a member, I encourage you to consider all the benefits that come with membership in IASA. For example, there are lots of opportunities for you to volunteer your knowledge and expertise for the benefit of the industry. Find out more at IASA.org. Well, David, thanks for joining us today. You know, last year I spoke with a meteorologist about his catastrophe bingo card. And the one spot that didn't really get covered was a major hurricane affecting the Gulf. Well, we almost dodged that proverbial bullet, didn't we? But not quite. Do you think the area will fare as well in 2023?
Actually, the Gulf Coast was not able to dodge a bullet with a hurricane this year because of Hurricane Ian. Hurricane Ian went in the coast of Florida just south of Tampa Bay. And based on preliminary projections, will be the costliest hurricane on record, surpassing the Katrina estimates by about 50% in weight-adjusted damages. So while we were rocking along and having a really, really good year and a low-activity hurricane season, that one hurricane basically confirmed everything that the property markets were already knew and what they were doing. And any potential relief that was going on that early that we may or may not have started to be able to see was thrown out the window. And basically it's game on from a property standpoint.
Yes, having Ian come ashore that late in the year was so unfortunate. It came in, I guess, just south of Tampa and really wrecked up a lot of beautiful coastline along the western coast of Florida.
And it continued across Florida back into the open Atlantic and then went back ashore in South Carolina. While the damages were not heavy in that area, the dollar values are still significant.
Now, from some of the articles that I've read, it seems that property and casualty insurance has gotten harder to come by in the Gulf Coast, particularly in Louisiana. Would you mind expanding on that for maybe a few minutes and give us some cause and effect and some of your outlook?
Sure. The property market in general, not only in Louisiana, but really across any coastal area across the United States, has been going through a pretty radical change over the last couple of years. The real key factors that are driving everything, obviously, are number one, losses. Number two, fraud in the insurance claims process, the legal environment from a court standpoint, as well as the legislative. Last but not least is the significant changes within the reinsurance market that are really dictating and driving everything happening on a primary property basis. Let's talk just a little bit about, obviously, the losses. 2022 was shaping up to be the best property year in probably the last 10 until Hurricane Ian. And then Hurricane Ian basically took the year and turned it on its ear. What is driving property is not just the catastrophe losses like that, but really the unintended losses that have affected property markets all over the place. That's anything from wildfires that have decimated towns on the West Coast to mountainous areas to the extreme weather events that have really never been handled within the property markets. The tornadoes are getting stronger. The straight line winds and thunderstorms are getting stronger. They're affecting areas that have never been really affected before. And so everything is being brought to the forefront that carriers really have not paid attention to, which kind of leads to really where carriers are going and what is being forced upon clients. And it's starting with the reinsurance carriers really pushing down. First and foremost is insurance valuations. As we all know, insurance values don't always keep up with inflation. And a lot of policies have an inflation product, 2 to 3 to 4% built into their policies each and every year. What happens when you have coming out of the last 3 years is you've got pretty significant construction inflation from materials, from labor to the supply chain issues. What used to take 90 days to accomplish now is taking 9 months to a year to build, and the costs are 50% more. Well, people aren't adjusting their values by that amount. They're just saying, okay, 2 or 3%. Well, the carriers are not accepting that anymore. And so what that creates is changes from an insurance standpoint, is you're out of compliance with your replacement cost provisions or your co-insurance provisions within an insurance policy. Within the changes of just a pure construction market, the values are having to be increased. Also, changes in building codes are causing anywhere from Florida to Alabama to Mississippi to Texas, anything that's coastally built has to have new and pretty significant changes in construction methods and means. Anything built within so many miles of open water has to build minimum wind standards of 125 to 150 miles an hour, has to be significantly reinforced. I think as you've seen with the last couple hurricanes that have hit Florida and certain areas in South Louisiana, the only structures that were standing after some of these devastating hurricanes were people that built their structures out of essentially concrete, and they were pretty much left unscathed. And so the frame construction that has been the predominant construction along the coast is really going by the wayside. And if you are, then underwriters want to know, how many roof tie downs do you have? What's the distance? What kind of shingles do you have? How old are your shingles? Are your framing braces set on 18-inch standards, or are they on 12-inch standards? The tighter it is, the stronger the facility from a construction standpoint. And so they want to know what kind of windows you're using. Are you using wind-rated impact-resistant windows? Are you using wind-rated impact-resistant sliders? What are you doing to help further protect your property from catastrophic damage? And every one of those factors is going into property underwriting. These are questions they've never asked before. But if you don't answer them the right way, you're either not getting coverage or you're getting severely restricted coverage. Restricted meaning reduced coverage, higher wind limits, et cetera.
Okay, but what about the reinsurance market? Is there any help to be had there?
The carriers, some of the reinsurers are actually pushing down that they're not covering any wind-driven rain into those type of structures. And so unless there's some actual damage to the structure, then wind-driven rain is not a covered peril. They're just excluding it altogether, and it's being passed down from the reinsurers to the fronting carriers all the way through.
Well, how do you think the residents and businesses along the Gulf can be better prepared for another disaster on the scale of Ian or Katrina?
Outside of being proactive and adding strengthening to your own property and taking some of it into your own hands and spending some money and really reinforcing your house from potential damage. Unfortunately, that's one of the things you're going to have to do, but also being able to remediate, be prepared, do things that you can, a resident can do to lower the actual ultimate cost of loss. And that's pictures and documentation of each and everything. Take pictures before you leave. If you have to evacuate, move everything that is potentially mobile and flying away from indoors, move it away so it's not a projectile outside. And if you do your part and everybody does their part, then hopefully the long term is it will ultimately end up reducing losses. The change in building codes is great for properties built now and into the future, but you still have the historical claims. The structures that were built in Florida and Ian after 2016, those structures themselves had significantly lower damage than did structures that were older than that. And a lot of that is changes in building codes. And the same thing happens in Alabama and Louisiana. The newer structures just did not sustain the damage, with the exception of Lake Charles. And there was pretty much nothing that was unscathed with the hurricanes there a couple of years ago.
So I suppose if someone's going to do some renovations, or when they're going to do some renovations, especially major ones, they might be able to do some things to mitigate risk, yes?
If there's any major renovations going in and retrofitting anything from windows to doors to roof tie downs, anything prior to 2005, roof tie downs were not required as part of the code. the building codes did change in Louisiana after that. They changed after Andrew in Florida. And so every support structure has to have multiple tie-downs. And a tie-down is essentially just a U-shaped nailed-in clamp that instead of just a nail and a 2x4 or a 2x12, it's just adding an additional layer of metal support that instead of just being able to rip a board out because it's just a nail, it's just something, an additional piece of structure to try to reduce claims.
Well, David, how is this affecting the way that you do business?
Really, for us, our jobs have kind of increased and magnified significantly. Anything from absolutely inspecting every piece of property, having, unfortunately, some painful conversations with your clients, talking about changes in the property market, talking about things that they can possibly do, talking about reductions in coverage. We've had clients that, you know, had large property schedules that carried wind limits all the way up to their full limit. Now we can only buy 5 million or 10 million. And it's just cost prohibitive to buy anything above that. We're having to do what we refer to as catastrophic modeling property schedules. There are essentially five different models out there. The most prominent is the RMS, the AIR, and the EIGN modeling systems. The RMS system first came out after Katrina and has been modified based on different catastrophic events over the years. And so when you have one of those runs, you have run on your clients, you have to look at, okay, which model am I using? Am I using a 2005 model, a 2009, 12, 15, 17, 20? Because each one changes those values. I've had a version of the RMS and the AIR run on one of my clients recently, and what it does, it predicts based on using 10,000 iterations of potential events. And it estimates losses based on wind, based on water surge, based on any number of events, basically based on where they are. And each model comes out with a different result. And carriers usually use a 250-year benchmark from a modeling standpoint, and that's how they set their rates. And when you look at that, you have to understand the differences between the models and then start negotiating with the carriers, at least on the primary basis, because everything on tower is built on that primary premium.
And what do you think about, you know, the accuracy or reliability of these models?
You know, I would say it's covered to about a 99.8% degree of accuracy. And that 0.02% is really a couple of the 500-year events that have hit in the last 5 years. You know, the difference in numbers between a 250 and a 500-year event when you're looking at a property schedule is really about 10% in values. It's just not a huge, huge number, you know, overall in the big picture.
Are you seeing other ways that insurance companies are trying to adapt or adjust to these Gulf Coast perils?
Some of the other things besides the reduction in limits that the carriers are doing, there are also changes in terms and conditions. They're looking at roof ages of anything and everything that's out there, and they're putting roof limitation endorsements on there where they're not paying replacement costs. And this is pretty consistent across the Gulf Coast. And when we say consistent, anything over 8 years or 9 years does not have replacement cost on it anymore. It has actual cash value, meaning they're only going to pay the depreciated value in the event something is damaged. They're also putting what they refer to as cosmetic endorsements on there. If you have a wind or a hail event and it does not pierce the roof, but it just changes the look of it and does not, you know, cause any leaks or anything like that, then they're not going to pay to repair or replace the roof. They're saying your roof's fine, even though that potential damage will reduce the life of the roofs. These are things that started a couple of years ago. They were relatively common in Louisiana and in Florida. They're being now passed along to the rest of the United States. And a lot of people are not overly happy about them. You know, the Dallas, Oklahoma, the tornado corridor is seeing those. And the West Coast is starting to see those with some of the events that have happened out there, including Utah and Nevada and Arizona. And they're not happy about it. But they really don't know the full effect till they have a claim. And I guess that's really the bigger part that people don't understand. Also, the wind hail deductibles that have been down here for 15, 16 years, now are being spread to the rest of the country, using anywhere from 1 to 2%, and then in coastal areas, either 5 up to 10% wind deductible. And so that's what, you know, those are some of the things that we're seeing pretty predominantly.
You know, one last thing I wanted to ask you about is just the potential for fraud. It just seems like the door would be wide open for fraud, especially in the Gulf Coast area. What are your thoughts?
In Florida, certain things are allowed in Florida. The public adjusters are allowed down there, and public adjusters take over for clients, and they get paid on a percentage of the loss, kind of like a plaintiff attorney does. And I won't say there's some outright fraud involved in every one of them, because there's some good ones out there, but they do have a tendency to inflate values of claims, either on purpose or not on purpose, which ultimately drives up cost of claims and can have negative long-term effects on the insurance business. The legal environment, as we've seen the plaintiff's bar start advertising really all over the country from an auto liability standpoint, they're also heavily involved when you have catastrophe events from a property standpoint. And all it takes is one plaintiff attorney to have damage and have a bad experience within their own claim to fuel his desire to get back at insurance companies. Some of what is going on is also, historical from the standpoint of an insurance company's creating their own problems. Insurance policies 40 years ago used to be about 20 pages long to 25 pages long. Now they're anywhere from 80 to 120 pages long, and all those extra pages are exclusions or revisions to court cases that a carrier lost somewhere that they didn't intend to. So there's more and more restrictions within the policies themselves. Also, sometimes the carriers their claims handling ability has changed pretty significantly over the years. Sometimes their hands are tied on a casualty claim where they just roll over and pay things that are questionable or really out and out fraud, but they're hand struck by the court system and they have to end up paying it. So they intend on first party claims, on property claims, they turn around and fight their clients tooth and nail. And, they've created this system that has become somewhat adversarial. And that's part of the process that's driven, some changes as well.
Well, David, I really do appreciate all of your insight. And that's about all the time that we have for today's podcast. If our listeners would like to reach out to you, David, what would be the best way they can reach you?
They can either reach me via email at david_Perry@ajg.com, or they can always call my office. My direct line is 225-906-1258.
And if you have any comments about the show or any show suggestions, you can always email me at tim.hicks@fisglobal.com. Please join us for our next episode when I sit down with a panel of guests from Plant Moran to talk about putting enterprise risk management into action. Until then, I'm Tim Hicks with today's guest, David Perry.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tim.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please do us a huge favor and subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss a new episode. If you have coworkers that need to know about the podcast, let them know so they can follow along as well. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.